When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to Pick a Flick. I'm your host for the evening, Emma Platt, and joining me is Mr. Matt Latham.
Hello.
And Paul Fields.
Evening, guys.
And this week we are discussing 80s comedies, so let's jump in and pick a flick. Airplane, which was titled Flying High in Australia, New Zealand, South Africa, Japan and the Philippines, is a 1980 American parody film directed and written by David Zucker. The film is a parody of the disaster genre, particularly the 1957 Paramount film Zero Hour, from which it borrows the plot and central characters, as well as many elements from Airport 1975. This film is known for its use of surreal humour and its fast-paced slapstick comedy, including visual and verbal puns and gags. Airplane was a critical and financial success, grossing over $83 million in North America alone, against a budget of just $3.5 million. The film's creators received the Writers Guild of America Award for Best Adapted Comedy and nominations for the Golden Globe Award for Best Motion Picture, Musical or Comedy, and the BAFTA Award for Best Screenplay. In the years since its release, Airplane's reputation has grown substantially. The film was ranked 6th on Bravo's 100 Funniest Movies, and in 2007 survey by Channel 4 in the United Kingdom, it was judged the second greatest comedy film of all time after Monty Python's The Life of Brian.
Can I get you something?
It's your mofo butter laying me to the bone, jacking me up. Take me.
I'm sorry, I don't understand.
Cutty say can't hang.
Oh, stewardess, I speak jive.
Oh, good.
He said that he's in great pain and he wants to know if you can help him.
All right, would you tell him to just relax and I'll be back as soon as I can with some medicine.
Just hang loose, blood. She's gonna catch up on the rebound out of med side.
What it is, big mama. My mama raised no dummies. I duck a rap.
Cut me some slack, Jack. Chomp don't want to help. Chomp don't get the help.
Say can't hang. Say seven up.
Jive ass dude don't got no brains in here.
So some high praise there for Airplane. What did we think?
I love it. I can't remember the first time I watched it. It was years and years and years ago. But my favourite genre of the film is the spoof genre. So, and I've spoken about the Naked Gun. No, it's not. Police Squad on this podcast before. And this is part of, like, the genesis of that genre, and it does it really well. And I still find it very, very funny.
But it did... it did spawn an awful lot of absolute garbage that we have to put up with now today, though.
Yeah, and it does, but I think what this film... what this film does, I think it shows how the genre works, whether... the modern day films don't. So you've got your whatever movie. Anything past Scary Movie 2 is pretty awful. But they kind of shoehorn in the plot to fit the jokes, whereas this is the other way around. It's very natural in how the jokes kind of support the plot being made, and any references or any non-sequiturs don't hijack the plot, whereas the genre nowadays will actually pause, suddenly try and introduce Willy Wonka out of nowhere, because the plot, and then the plot dovetails, and then Willy Wonka's in Narnia or I think I kind of nearly killed myself watching Epic Movie.
I was going to say, out of interest, have you seen any of the films that were mentioned in the intro, the kind of, especially the Airport franchise?
I haven't. So it's what's quite interesting is that I've not seen any of the films that it's actually based on.
Mm-hmm.
So
they're all terrible. They're all exactly the same. They're all, you know, it was just there's a jumbo jet and then a crisis would befall it, and the effects were terrible, and Airplane actually it looks like those films, it really does. And they just rolled them out every 2 years. I remember seeing Airport 75, 77, 79, I think might have been about the Concorde. They were awful. But people went to see them. And an Airplane was definitely born out of those films. So in the way that the ones that we get nowadays are born out of films, this did have the same kind of, as you say, its starting point was other films it was lampooning.
But isn't it more a case of having a specific genre and specific tropes that it knows how to build an original story around and then refer to, rather than having like so many different what's popular at the time? So what, so 1980, what was, like, if you've got a load of different genre films in 1980, which I can't remember off the top of my head, if you took the today's model, you'd have all these different, just anything that would have been the top five for that year on IMDb if it was around in 1980, just shoehorned in together, which is what happened with, I don't know, Meet the Spartans and Epic Movie and I really don't remind myself of those films, but whereas stuff like the original Naked Gun film or even the first Hot Shots film, they took a very strong central narrative and then built around it rather than trying to shoehorn in as much of what is popular at that time.
Yeah, there's less pop. There aren't really many pop culture references in this that I can that stand out. But maybe if you watched it back then, there would be a few. I know when you've got people like the what are they called? You know, the religious guys who give you flowers and stuff. They were everywhere back in the 70s and 80s. But you don't see them so much now.
I think it might be that. Well, it doesn't date then, so I don't think the references are that specific.
No, it doesn't. You're right. This does. I mean, it does hold up.
Yeah. Whereas, again, bringing up Epic Movie, which I'm really, really sorry for bringing up that film, because it is really bloody awful.
It is terrible.
You've got specific. You got Willy Wonka. You've got Chronicles of Narnia, which are very specific named references. Whereas, again, with Airplane, you've got these tropes and usual stock characters, stock situations, all coming together in a more natural way.
Yep, absolutely.
I watched it for the first time. I think it was late last year. And I think because that was the first time I'd seen it, it just seemed really dated to me. And because I'd like heard so much about how funny it was and, you know, it was one of the greatest comedies of all time, I think I had my expectations set too high.
I think that kind of happens with some films. I think I know that I've seen a couple of comedies which, my mind's gone blank, where people are saying, oh, it's hilarious, and it just passes me by. I mean, to this day, I didn't like, well, not like, I just didn't find Blazing Saddles funny when I saw it. And that was about 5 or 6 years ago.
The thing about comedy, though, it's so subjective. I won't hang anyone out to dry for liking, you know, you like what, if it, I've got this thing about comedy, if it makes me laugh, that's it. That's all I need, really. Anything other than that's a bonus. But I find with Airplane, if you're pissed, it is very funny. And the more drunk you are, the funnier it gets. Emma, did you watch it sober?
I did watch it sober. So maybe that was the problem. Maybe I should just get really, really
drunk.
I think it
gives you the giggles. And then once you start,
I think it's more my kind of comedy in general. So, I mean, I've never seen it drunk. I might have to try it one day. But I've never seen it drunk, and I still find it funny. But then that might be my kind of humour. This is my style of, I just love films like this.
Well, they throw so many jokes at you. It is relentless. And in a way, I mean, they can't, I mean, and when you're firing that many jokes, it's hard to fail. You're going to get laughs.
Yeah, but I think that I think what happens with this film anyway is that quite a lot of them hit. Quite a lot of them are actually quite funny, and I think the probably the first time some of them are actually used. I think quite a lot of them you see them repeated in terms of, especially the non-sequiturs and the slight gags. I think this is like one of the first films to really encourage that. I mean, there's the extended sequence with all the pilots' names being all basically.
I love that scene so much.
Where all the. The pilots' names are all
over, under,
over there. Yeah.
Roger.
Yeah,
Roger, over, under.
Yeah, and then you've got the out of nowhere turning things on the head, where you've got the black passengers who speak jive, and then it's suddenly this old elderly white woman who just starts speaking. Come here, some slack, Jack. That's
was
suddenly
that the
out
first,
of nowhere.
Was that the first like on screen rapping granny?
Quite possibly, yeah.
Because I am a sucker for even now. You know, when an old lady swears, or you know, that is the phrase, isn't it? The rapping granny. It's an all-encompassing phrase for any elderly person doing something amusing on screen. Yeah.
Unfortunately, I think it was beaten by, I can't remember the actress's name, but that bit from The Wedding Singer. I love that film in general. But yeah, there's that old elderly lady who starts doing the start of Rapper's Delight, which.
I think as well, I mean, it is quite slapstick, and I quite enjoy like slapstick comedies, but I enjoy like one of my favourite comedies of all time is Ace Ventura 2 and Nature Calls, and like Jim Carrey's early stuff. But I showed Dumb and Dumber to someone who'd never seen it before until last year, and they didn't think it was remotely funny, and I think it's hilarious, and I think...
You know, Tony regards that as one of the best comedies of the 90s.
I agree with him. I think it's hilarious. Like, Jim Carrey, and until about 97, he was, I don't know what happened to him. But
The Truman Show broke his sense of humour, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I know he made, like, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, which is one of my favourite films ever, but he's lost that comedy spark, I think. But he was, like, really, really funny. But then... I used to love him. I don't know if anyone else has ever seen this. It's a Charlie Sheen film called Major League.
Yeah, I've seen it.
I've not heard of it now.
I must have watched that about 700 times when I was little. And I think if I watched it now, I'd be like, what is this crap? But I think certain films, they tend, especially if you've seen them when you were younger, and I'm really guilty of this, hold like a special place in your heart, and you'll never think they're anything other than amazing. Like, even like Masters of the Universe... and the Super Mario Brothers film, I that's still got this really special place in my heart, and I won't hear a bad thing about it. And Mortal Kombat, both of them, I still watch both of them.
Well, going back to Airplane, I saw this. I had to check if I had seen it, because I'm sure I remember seeing it at the cinema, but I thought I'd better check the certificate to make sure I wasn't going mad. Do you know what certificate this is?
15,
Matt.
I'm going to guess 15 as well.
Okay, well, originally it was an A, which meant back in the day when I was young, you could go in, anyone could go in as long as you had an adult with you.
So like a 12A?
Yeah, then they reclassified it as a PG, then they reclassified it again as a 15, and now they've reclassified it again as a 12A. They don't know what to do with it. I think it's all because of the, you know, the pilot, he starts making like really inappropriate comments to that boy.
Yes. You know what?
And I think the BBFC are sat there going, oh, fuck.
I think you're thinking about it, that scene, that character trait would not fly now, would it?
Well, that's why they keep changing their mind. They genuinely, the BBFC, are in a real muddle with this film. They don't know quite what to do with it.
I'm pretty sure I've seen edits on the BBC when they've shown it years ago. And I think the only edit they've ever made, I think they've kept... I'm pretty sure is the frontal nudity in this one? Or is it number two?
I can't
remember.
I saw it yesterday morning.
Yeah. I can't remember. I know... I think one of the... Because I think it's either two where you actually see... There's like a split shot of like a topless woman in one of it. That stayed in the BBC edit. It might be in this or another one. I'm not sure.
But the creepy pedo jokes out...
Yeah. Yeah, that was edited out, and this was like, God, at least 10 years ago, I think. So it's very strange, very strange. But I could probably see why that's probably the sticking point, not the giving a inflatable autopilot a blowjob for no reason.
I mean, looking at the cast, I mean, these aren't big names, are they? This is a strange one. These guys haven't... I mean, apart from Leslie Nielsen and Lloyd Bridges, those are the only two, for me anyway, really sort of recognisable people in it. I mean, Ted and Elaine, the leads, I don't know them from anything else, do you?
No, I don't really know much. I'm just looking at the cast as well. I didn't realise Jonathan Banks was in it.
I think
Mike from Breaking Bad was in Airplane.
Oh, okay.
I didn't realise that. I think Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, I think he's like was a massive basketball game. I think the equivalent would be, I don't know, David Beckham turning up in...
Is that the co-pilot, the black guy?
Because they got that very good... Well, he's probably really good if you knew who he was, that meta joke about the kid going, no, you're Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. He goes, no, I'm a pilot.
That's some really early, like, what I call stunt casting, where you get, you know, a sports star or a rapper to appear in your comedy film.
I think that was the precursor for O.J. Simpson in the Naked Gun films, to be honest.
Could have been, yeah.
Yeah. But,
And now that whole thing, we covered this on Failed Critics not long ago, it's rampant. I had like the top 30 rapper cameos in comedies. That's a list. The top 30, implying that there are more than 30. But, you've got to say, I mean, although it's funny, it's fast-paced, it's slapstick, they ain't great actors in this. they weren't picking up any awards for their performances, that's for sure.
Do you know, you mentioned that that basketball player then, Matt. Oh no, I was reading the wrong thing. I thought it said on Wikipedia that the basketball player reprised his role as an airplane pilot in Sharknado 2, but it wasn't. It was Robert Hayes, and I was thinking,
oh right,
what? That's a bit... Come on, Sharknado. But I still won't watch.
I think the trick, one of the things I think the trick as well with the film was that I think the majority, well, most of the cast were all dramatic actors. I mean, I think this was like Leslie Nielsen's first real spoof film, and look what, and it reinvitalized his career. But
I think you need straight guys in this, though, don't you? If you need act, that's what makes it funny.
Yeah.
When you've got proper character actors in there, people who are not normally known for comedy, you know, saying inappropriate stuff and being silly,
yeah,
that in itself generates laughs.
I think that helps with the whole style of film as well. I can remember, I don't know if you, have you ever watched A Touch of Cloth by Charlie Brooker?
Oh, I love that.
It was amazing.
And and it's very similar, but that's done really well.
I remember seeing, I think it was the directors saying to James Nesbitt and Susan Sarandon, is that you have to sell every single line of dialogue as if you're trying to win a BAFTA for best drama, and you have to have that serious almost like you're trying to seriously convey this as dramatic as a drama.
Did they do a second series of that? I'm sure I saw the first one. It was like a DVD feature length version.
Well, of Touch of Cloth, I think there was three 2-part specials. So,
okay.
Yeah, so they had the one which was spoofing your normal police dramas. Then you had your second one, which is all the undercover, gritty BBC modern dramas. And then the third one, I can't remember what it was spoofing, but Karen Gillan was in it.
So, I don't think I've seen the third one then, because I remember. I'm sure that they must have re-edited them for DVD, because I bought it at a boot fair for like a quid. And it was definitely like a 90-minute feature they made it into.
Yeah, but
so,
but yeah, it was def. But that kind, that dramatic, that aiming to perform it as a comedy. No, perform it as a drama. That I think that was very much influenced by how they did Airplane.
They've just done it. There's a brand new series out in the States, and which I can't remember the name of it, but it stars Rashida Jones,
Angie Tribeca.
There you go. Now, do you like that? Have you seen it?
Yeah, I've seen it. I really enjoyed it.
Okay.
There's issues with that style on a series anyway, because I think after a certain amount of episodes, it does run out of steam, and there's quite a few. I think the original Naked Gun series, by the sixth episode, does start to strain, even after six episodes. And there's an Australian show called Danger 5. The first series was like spoofing Thunderbirds and putting live action and 1960s spy shows, and that slowed down quite a lot as well. by the 6 series, but then the second series, they pretty much rebooted it and set it as a 1980s Christmas film for 6 episodes, which added some life into it.
I think the point is it's really hard to get this kind of comedy right.
Yes, exactly. And
and not make it cheap.
Yeah, because I think it's barely under 90 minutes, isn't it? And it's very fast, it's very quick, and you can't keep it going for as long as it can. Usually you can't keep that hit rate as strong as you can. Well, which is
exactly. I mean, you'd normally, there might be some exposition, some dialogue, a bit of drama, but there's not. It's just gag, 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 and it's just bum, 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 bum. And if this was a 2.5-hour film, it would be too much.
Exactly. It's probably
why... I think
why,
it doesn't outstay its welcome.
I think it's why quite a lot of longer comedy films aren't as probably highly regarded as perhaps shorter ones, as particularly in this genre. I think quite a lot of the, especially the Zucker films, the Zucker spoof films, and I think quite a few of the Mel Brooks ones, they barely go underneath 90 minutes. They are very quick, they're very in-out, before and with varying degrees of success, but they're very short paced. It's very short paced, and it knows what it's doing. Very quick, snappy stuff.
We'd like to thank Andy Mosley for his nomination of Airplane tonight. So, moving on to a discussion about 1980s comedy as a whole, I'm just looking at the Internet Movies Database top 100 comedies of the 80s, and out of the top 30, I've seen 3. So, I've seen Ghostbusters, obviously, and Back to the Future, but the rest, and Airplane, I have never, ever seen any of these. And Mr. Mom's on there, Airplane 2, Easy Money, Stripes, Cannonball Run, 9 to 5, Caddyshack. I've never seen any of these films whatsoever.
Crikey. What are your favourite? I'm guessing you won't have seen that many then.
My favourite 80s comedy is Ghostbusters. My favourite comedy ever is Ghostbusters. My favourite film ever is Ghostbusters. So that's the only one I've seen.
Matt, go on, what are yours? I'm really curious.
I'm just quickly going through this like best 100 comedies, and there's a few. I think a lot of mine are 90s based, but quickly going through the list, I mean, Airplane is one of them. Airplane 2, which I didn't think I liked as much as the first one. Ghostbusters, again. I completely forgot until I was doing research that you can technically class most of the Police Academy films, and I've got a massive, massive soft spot for the Police Academy films. All of them. I really like those. Really like those. Back to the Future is classed as a comedy film as well.
That's a bit... I mean, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels is on there at number 52, but I saw that last year, and there was only one bit I laughed at. So maybe I'm not,
Oof, I've had a few people have picked that. I put out a thing on Twitter earlier, and I got a shit ton of responses, that came up a few times.
Yeah, well,
I mean, I've done a little list. It's not huge. I've gone for Revenge of the Nerds, Porky's, Weird Science, A Christmas Story, which is, I think it's really popular here. It's, everyone watches it in the States at Christmas. It's an acquired taste. Bachelor Party, Dirty Rotten Scoundrels, See No Evil, Hear No Evil.
Oh, God, I forgot that was the 80s. I loved that film.
Yeah. Earth Girls Are Easy. And you're going to hate me for this, but my favourite 80s comedies is Weekend at Bernie's.
I've never seen that.
Come on, who doesn't like watching two idiots drag a dead guy around and making everyone else believe he's still alive?
The only way I know of that film is because of... I've just watched How I Met Your Mother, like the entire series, and they keep talking about doing a Weekend at Bernie's in the last season.
It's so good.
I'm to the 60s now. Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. I adore... Major League's Ghostbusters 2, which is not as bad as everyone tries to make out it is. It's really not.
I remember when I suddenly realised that people didn't like Ghostbusters 2, and I was generally confused.
I didn't realise that till about 18 months ago.
I didn't realise there was thick people still.
No. The Three Amigos as well. I love The Three Amigos. I have not thought about that film in forever. But
apparently Big. But
I've never seen it.
You know,
I haven't seen a lot of films. Now looking at this, I'm thinking, Who Framed Roger Rabbit?
How many on that list are British?
There ain't many,
are there?
No, so it's...
It is a real strange one, and twins. Somebody...
Twins.
Sorry.
Twins.
Twins apparently is classed as a comedy.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Oh, it is. I enjoyed that.
Is Kindergarten Cop 90s or 80s?
90s.
90s, ah, yeah. Okay.
Two people earlier mentioned the only British film that anyone mentioned was a thing called Party Party. I'd never heard of it. Have you heard of it?
No, I saw you mention it on Twitter and I gave it a quick look and was shocked to find that Nick Berry and Caroline Quentin had careers in the early 80s.
Yep.
Yeah.
It was a real, real strange... It was almost like an episode of EastEnders. In fact, Billy Mitchell and... I don't really watch it very often. Another EastEnders lady was in it. It was just... I think it has to be seen to be believed. It was so... just sexist and wrong, and I'm not that guy. I normally stuff like that just passes me by and I'll laugh. But, you know, you've got Caroline Quentin and her friend, and the policeman's talking to them, and while he's talking to them, he's lifting their skirts up with his truncheon. And I'm like, what is going on? I mean, although it's of the time, it's free to watch on YouTube. If you want to see why there probably weren't many British comedies made in the 80s, I think Party Party may well be a clue.
But I'm going to go back and refer to something that this in the very early days of Pigger Flick that on a podcast I was on, where Tony and our friend Matt Dawson was talking about the British sex comedies from the late 70s. Now, I was wondering whether because of the fallout from that and the lack and when they slightly died off, whether the British film industry didn't really capitalise on, didn't really know where to go for comedy in the 80s. Because I'm struggling to think of any 80s comedy.
That could be, that's a really good point, because obviously after the Carry-Ons, you then had all these Confessions of a Plumber, Confessions of a Window Cleaner, and they were all really bawdy sex comedies, and yeah... In the 80s, there weren't much. Apart from Party Party, I'm trying to... With Nail and I, the John Cleese thing, what's that? I can't remember what it's called. There you go.
Was that British?
Yeah, was in the 80s.
What? That was British, wasn't it?
A Fish Called Wanda.
Pretty sure it was. But anyway.
Yes, British.
Yeah, so the point being, though, there ain't many British comedies made in the 80s, but coming out of the States... It's just non-stop. It was relentless. And I loved it because I grew up in the 80s. I was born in 1970. You know, from watching... When you were a kid, you know, that's probably the genre you gravitate towards most. Especially as you become a teenager. And for me, it was a golden age. I absolutely fucking loved it. You know, queuing up outside the cinema to go and see Weird Science, and then going back the next day to queue up again. I thought this is incredible.
Because I remember, I think on the 90s comedy one that I did, talking about when growing up with films. I think I grew up with a lot more 90s comedy because I think I've seen a lot more comedies based in the 90s. And I don't know whether you're the same, Emma. A lot of whether quite a few favourite films are 90s
based.
Yeah,
no, definitely. Like I said before, Ace Ventura 2 is one of my favourite comedies of all time. It was on the other week and I was still laughing my head off. Like, I'd never seen it before. Like, Dumb and Dumber, Clerks and Mallrats.
Talking about subjective comedy, in the 90s one, a lot of people were doing write-in votes for Clerks, and I remember saying that I watched 15 minutes of it and couldn't watch anymore.
I think the first 15 minutes are quite slow, though. But I watched that when I got into college and when I got all pretentious about art and I was like, I'm going to watch Clerks. I'm going to see Austin Powers. I can't remember if it was Austin Powers 2 in the pictures, but I don't know if that was really late 90s, like 99.
That was 99, because I remember going to see it.
I'm going to see that. But I think, aside from Ghostbusters, a lot of my favourite comedies are 90s, based like The Wedding Singer. I know it's a romantic comedy, but I really, really love Wedding Singer, and I think I could watch Dumb and Dumber with my dad every day of the week. But I think it does, like, comedy. I think comedy and horror are the two, like, most subjective genres, because not everyone's scared of the same thing and not everybody laughs at the same thing. Like, my mum, because it's Easter Sunday next week, me and my dad will inevitably watch The Life of Brian, and my mum has never, ever, ever laughed at that film, not even once, not even a little snort, do you know, ever. And I don't understand that, because I think it's funny, but obviously it's humour, such a strange thing, isn't it, when you think about it, like how something makes you laugh, but not someone you're biologically related to doesn't find it funny at all. It's so weird. But my dad is quite, he likes like Laurel and Hardy, and like he introduced me to like Monty Python and things like that. So I think that's why we like.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
The Ace Ventura and the Mask and that kind of thing, because it's very slapstick-esque.
Do you want to hear, I've got a lot of tweets here. Do you want to hear what people have nominated as their favourite 80s comedies? We've got Mark, CPFC fan 70, he's gone for Spinal Tap and Trading Places. We haven't mentioned those tonight, have we yet? Brooker has gone for the Rob Lowe sex tape. Oh dear. Steve off the Foul Critics has gone for Ghostbusters. Ben, BlueNose79, he's gone for Crocodile Dundee. Steve Fisher has gone for Fast Times at Ridgemont High. Stripes. Caddyshack. None of those have been mentioned yet. Richard James Purdom, he's gone for The Naked Gun.
Good choice.
Andy Alcock, Calamari Union. I don't even know what that
is. I've never heard of it.
Big miss here from all of us, The Princess Bride.
I've never seen it.
Oof, it's an acquired taste, but the people who love it, yeah, they love it. It's almost, you know, you go along to screenings and they know all the lines.
Is that's the Indigo Montoya one, isn't it?
Andre the Giant's in there. I know that.
Quickly finished. So Andy Alcock, so he's gone for Beetlejuice, Big Trouble in Little China, Little Shop of Horrors, Gremlins, Goonies.
I forgot about Gremlins.
I don't think I've seen that. I've seen Gremlins. The sequel.
You've not seen Gremlins?
No.
No,
I've seen Gremlins 2.
Oh, blimey. They've reclassified it. Again,
yeah,
that was
I can
50,
see why.
Because they microwave the Gremlin. And then last Christmas, they reclassified it and they showed it again in cinemas. And I took she would have been 11, my daughter, to see it at the cinema. And she absolutely loved it. She had a riot. Let me finish these off. So Matt Orff has gone for Party Party, which we mentioned. Sussex Football. I love it when like accounts that are not related to films tweet in. He's gone for Eddie Murphy. He Coming to America and Trading Places, and also See No Evil, Hear No Evil. We've got film producer Jonathan Sothcott. He's gone for Dirty Rotten Scoundrels. And Andy Hobbs has gone for Brewster's Millions, Trading Places, Coming to America, Caddyshack, Planes, Trains and Automobiles. There you go. Blimey,
the only scene I find funny in Dirty Rotten Scoundrels is when Steve Martin's sitting at the table and the butler goes, "Can I take your trident, sir?" And he just goes, "Please." I was dying laughing at that. On Facebook, Andrew Brooker said, "If it counts, Lethal Weapon, Ghostbusters, Breakfast Club, Airplane, Beetlejuice and Bill and Ted. Owen Hughes went for Whipnail and I, The Princess Bride, Ghostbusters and Fright Night. And our dark overlord, Tony Black, said Naked Gun."
We must have covered or mentioned pretty much.
Yeah, and that was everything that was funny in the 80s. I can't believe how much I haven't seen. Like, Goonies was on that list.
Matt, if you had to pick one, sorry Emma, I was going to say, Matt, if you had to pick one 80s comedy for Emma to watch, what would it be?
That she hasn't watched.
Yeah.
That I've watched.
She's only seen three, so.
See No Evil, Hear No Evil.
Oh, I'm going to go. You've got to watch Weekend at Bernie's.
Quite a few me and my friends, and our Dark Harvard, Lord Tony Black included, decided to try and start, have a Richard Pryor and Gene Wilder night, where we were trying to watch, I think there was about four films that was in, and we only watched two of them. I think we started with See No Evil, Hear No Evil, and then we went to watch Stir Crazy, and I think half of us fell asleep watching Stir Crazy. I think we peaked too early.
Yeah, if you want to watch it going around his house, he'll hypno you. Midway through the second film, you'll wake up in the morning.
most of the time I visit town, that usually happens anyway, so... I don't remember but that's what it tells me.
No, you watched all four.
No, we didn't. We only watched two.
Then you went out when we got a kebab.
But no, I think the point is that we peaked too early. We see no evil, hear no evil, because that film, that still makes me laugh. That film still makes me laugh. And it is quite a few jokes. It kind of dates, but it also doesn't. And Kevin Spacey's in it as your typical lackey, which is just so surreal nowadays.
I can't promise I'll watch either of those suggestions, but I do promise I will watch Ghostbusters about 400 times in the next 12 months. Breakfast Club is a 1985 American coming-of-age comedy drama film written, produced and directed by John Hughes and starring Emilio Estevez, Paul Gleason, Anthony Michael Hall, Judd Nelson, Molly Ringwald and Ali Sheedy. The storyline follows five teenagers, each a member of a different high school clique, who spend a Saturday in detention together and come to realise they are all more than their respective stereotypes.
What's in there?
Yes. Where's your lunch?
You're wearing it.
You're nauseating.
What's that?
Sushi.
Sushi?
Rice, raw fish, and seaweed.
You won't accept a guy's tongue in your mouth and you're gonna eat that?
Can I eat?
I don't know. Give it a try. What's your problem? What are we having? It's just your standard regular lunch, I guess. Milk? Soup. Oh, that's apple juice. I can read. PB&J with the crusts cut off. Well, Brian, this is a very nutritious lunch. All the food groups are represented. Did your mom marry Mr. Rogers?
No, Mr. Johnson.
Huh.
It's critics consider it one of the greatest high school films of all time, as well as one of Hughes' most memorable and recognisable works. The media refers to the film's five main characters as members of a group called the Brat Pack. I don't see how this is comedy. I know the part of these kind of like 16 Candles and St. Elmo's Fire and Fast Times at Ridgemont High and all that type of film kind of thing, but I didn't feel any sort of like sympathy or anything to any of the characters. I kind of got the feeling that when Monday morning comes, they're all just going to go back to exactly how the way they were at the beginning of the detention, because teenagers are fickle, you know, at the end of the day. I kind of don't get the appeal of The Breakfast Club, but that once again could be because I didn't see it until I was in my 20s. It wasn't something I watched when I was younger or anything, so I don't know. I kind of don't get it.
Do you want me to gush over this? I was 15 when I saw this, and I loved it. It spoke to me as a 15-year-old. I thought they were all amazing. I loved everyone in it. I just couldn't be. I just thought it just completely blew me away. Soundtrack on rotation. That song was just like, you know, went out and bought the 12-inch straight away. I just loved it. I absolutely fucking loved this film so much when I was a kid. I can see how now, I mean, in looking back, it's, you know, might not be considered a classic, but at the time, this was the fucking dog's bollocks. And those people in the Brat Pack, and not just the guys in this film, the rest of them, the other three, was Andrew McCarthy, Rob Lowe and Demi Moore made up that group. And they were superstars to us when I was growing up. For people my age, back, you know, when we were sort of 15, 16, 17, 18, in a way that I don't think is quite happens now. I know, you know, that my son, who's 15 now, probably has people he quite likes in films, but not in this way. Because, you know, there was no internet back here, you've got to remember. And seeing these guys on screen was just, I don't know, it really kind of took over my life. I used to have my hair like Andrew McCarthy and wear the same coat as him and stuff. It was like real. They were a big deal, a massive big deal. If you were into films and you were a teenager in the 80s, you know, these guys were the bollocks.
I'm assuming Molly Ringwald was like, from what I gathered, she was like the teenage star. She was like the biggest famous teenager in the...
She was. I mean, even in her, I think on her Twitter bio, I don't know if she still has it, but she says, like, you know, I was your high school crush in the 80s. And yeah, she pretty much was. Although, to be fair, I preferred Ally Sheedy. Slightly kooky.
But yeah, I could probably see that. She's very good looking. Well, yeah, she was very good looking in there.
But they weren't that good looking, though, were they? They were almost, you know, to your guy in the street, almost attainable, because they weren't, if you look at, you know, what would be considered, you know, sort of a bombshell now, they weren't, were they? Not really.
Well, no, but I could probably see the appeal.
Yeah,
them
absolutely.
That's the same reason I fancy Michael Fassbender, because I think, on the right night, I might have a chance. Might have a chance. I haven't got a chance with, like, you know, Chris Evans. No way in hell. But Michael Fassbender, maybe. That cope keeps me going.
I wanted to ask you guys, do you... we'll go back to Breakfast Club in a sec, but the director, John Hughes, who sadly no longer with us, his body of work is a real strange beast. Do you know how many films he directed without looking?
7,000.
He did 8 films, and 7 of them were within the space of 5 years.
Bloody hell.
He did 16 Candles in 84, Breakfast Club in 85, Weird Science in 85, Ferris Bueller's Day Off in 86, Planes, Trains and Automobiles in 87.
Oh, God, we forgot Ferris Bueller. Sorry.
She's Having a Baby. Yeah, we did. She's Having a Baby in 88 and Uncle Buck in 89. He did one more in the 90s, and that was that. All the rest are just writing credits. The fact that he did effectively 8 good films in 5 years and then never directed another film afterwards is absolutely bonkers. He just disappeared off the grid. And I saw a documentary about him where they tried to track him down. He refused point blank any interviews. He wouldn't have anything to do with anyone. and then he died. Real strange one.
Wow.
But he did keep on writing, and he wrote some absolute turt as well.
Okay, he actually wrote Home Alone 3.
Wow.
So he wrote 1 and 2, which are one of my favourite films growing up. And then he wrote 3. But that's just... I wonder if he lost a bet. He must have lost a bet.
I don't know. He was making really good films.
I know.
And then... It'll always... nobody will know, because he's dead now, and nobody will ever know.
But if we go back to Breakfast Club for a second, because so I watched it for the first time, I watched half of it yesterday, and the second half today, for the first time, and I completely agree that it's not a comedy. There's a few bits that make you smile, which I thought was quite kind of not funny, but just like fun to look at. But it was more. It felt like it was like a stage play. Like a dramatic stage character study, stage play. These five people, who like end up with some quite revealing soliloquies, meant to challenge an actor, rather than being a feel good comedy at all. And I found that quite interesting. I mean, it's probably the impact of it's probably passed me by because of. I'm no longer a teenager. I'm old now, and but in terms of like character study, I found it quite interesting. As I was watching it, I didn't like John Bender to begin with, and I probably still don't. But
he's called Bender. Oh, and every time they say it, I start laughing. Yeah. I'm such a kid.
Then again, I think watching this film, I think I understand Matt Groening a lot more. I mean, at one point, someone says, "Eat my shorts." I think it was Bender that says, "Eat my shorts." The character named Bender. There's even...
Judd Nelson has all the best lines in this film. All the best lines.
Admit it, I think mainly he's the character who needs to progress the plot along. That's probably why he's a bit of an arse most of the time. He's the only one who's probably confident enough to just keep speaking to people. And how he speaks to people's a bit... makes him a bit like, I don't know, a dick. But
he is, I mean, do you know how old he is in the film?
27.
In real life. You're nearly 26. So he's all the weight's on his shoulders because he's the older, more experienced actor. A couple of the others are only 17. Emilio Estevez is 23 in it. Ali Sheedy's 23.
I'm pretty sure. Michael John Hurt looks like he's about, what, 12?
Anthony Michael Hall, you mean? Yeah, he's 17 in the film.
Yeah, but he looks a lot younger than everyone else. I think it's the character's supposed to be, I think, isn't he? But
I saw him yesterday, actually. I was watching the football on US TV, and he was in an advert where they show clips of all of his films for an unlimited streaming with AT&T. And then he's there. He's in the the bloody mobile phone shop. Trying to flog you a phone. I feel bad because he turned down. John Hughes wrote two more roles for him. He was in pretty much all of his films, bar two, and he turned down playing Cameron in Ferris Bueller's Day Off, and he turned down the Ducky in Pretty in Pink, which I'm thinking, in hindsight, he might be regretting that now. Now he's flogging Broadband.
When you said you saw him, I thought you meant...
Oh, no. I saw him on the telly. Flogging
like
Broadband.
You went to... I was just saying, what? That was random, really.
No, I remember my first Anthony Michael Hall getting his name right this time. Yes, Tony, I've got another name wrong. But no, Anthony Michael Hall, I loved the TV show Dead Zone, where he pretty much played the Christopher Walken character from the film. And that was my first time I noticed Anthony Michael Hall. But seeing him in that and then seeing him in this, it's quite a shock. But... yeah, it's quite...
He was amazing. I thought he was awesome because it's a great setup. You've got the rebel, the nerd, the princess, the weirdo, and the jock.
But do you think when I noticed when I'm watching it, you know, you've got Alison who's the weirdo or the basket case. They seem to. It's what happened. It's the introduction with Bender as well, where they seem to be quite over exaggerating their quirkiness. I mean. Bender walking through just like knocking everything off desks.
I think you have to. I mean, it's five guys in a library. Mm. You've got to. That's all it is.
But then, like, you've got her pouring sugar onto sandwiches, and it's, I don't know.
Yeah, it's a bit. But then again, teenagers are like that. Teenagers are, they try too hard to be so different because of all the emo angst. They're just teenagers that are horrible.
I love that.
Horrible.
I love that lunch scene where Emilio Estevez gets his lunch bag and he keeps pulling out sandwich after sandwich after sandwich. And then Ali Sheedy goes, she pulls all the stuff out of her sandwich, covers the bread in sugar and then puts cereal in it. And then Molly Ringwald's eating sushi. The whole thing is, I just thought it was brilliant.
Well, you can't fault it for not making them unique, which is one of the better things about the film. I think the characters are all unique and they do branch out and become three-dimensional as they go on. Because I think the point is that they reveal like a key fact about themselves to perfect strangers and how they get to know each other through a certain amount of time. You can't fault that. I think that was really well done. And I think it would make a really good stage play. I mean, but they probably had to do some recasting if they ever did.
There's a great dance scene.
Yes,
that would be a big showstopper. Exactly, yeah. That would be a great, if on stage. That would be a great showstopper. That would, wouldn't it?
Yeah, but
just before the interval.
Here's a question for you that I was thinking of as I was watching it. I'm surprised they haven't tried to remake it.
It just doesn't need to be remade because there's nothing. There aren't really any cultural references in it. All you could do is put newer, prettier people in it, running this same dialogue.
But then would it work if you had five people with different backgrounds? I mean, one thing I noticed, because this day and age all five, they're all five white teenagers, and nowadays you're not going to, that would be criticized in terms of this year.
Well, I can tell you now that Emilio Estevez's character would be gay because he wrestles other dudes in tights. It's a no-brainer.
But now I was thinking about if they was to make it, they'll probably have, or at least someone who's either closeted. I don't know. The idea I suddenly had was a closeted heterosexual for somebody. But so basically, someone like Kurt Hummel from Glee, who his dark secret is that he's got heterosexual feelings, which is like mainly because I think at the time, correct me if I'm wrong, that these five characters were probably eventually became against their stereotypes, which is the aim of the film. And I think from 1985, those tropes of like the princess, the basket case, the nerd, those are still fairly new in terms of teen comedy. Am I right? Or
they were, yeah. You're absolutely right. And a lot of the comedies, especially the John Hughes films, they played massively in that arena. And to be fair, this kind of comedy was, you either had this or something we didn't really touch upon when we did the 80s comedies, was because there was no internet, sex comedies, when I was a kid, were one of the only ways you would see tits. Or in the case of Revenge of the Nerds, the first time I ever saw a fanny on screen. Hey, it is what it is. There was no internet, I'm telling you. Matt's breaking out into a sweat now, thinking, no internet, bloody hell.
God say, hey, how do people go? But my point being is that
you had to find a magazine in the park, Matt.
But that reminds me of a scene in Space where Tim asks Daisy to buy porn, and she goes, Tim, you should just get it from the railway like everyone else. And he goes, no, I'm an adult, I'm supposed to leave it there.
But my original point is, like, because you've got those five tropes, but you could probably update those now, that scenario, to like five different characters,
five new ones, yeah,
but then quite a lot, and try and do further spins on something that's already been spun further and further, because you'll definitely have quite a few different demographics represented, and then trying to find new ways, so, which is why I think one of the new ones will be to get a gay student who is openly gay, but then suddenly might have heterosexual feelings or something, or perhaps the athlete is female and not... what? Female and, I don't know, What I found interesting was the sport they chose was wrestling and not football or basketball. But that might be due to my years of watching teenage American dramas where football and basketball were like the main ones.
I think wrestling meant that it was easier for them to for that confrontation where he threatens Judd Nelson all the time to be more believable. Because he fights. That's his sport.
Okay. But I think it's quite interesting it wasn't football, or at least basketball. But then that's me having that's me following Friday Night Lights for years, where football's the sport. Where you've got a modern version where you've got new characters, where you've got new tropes that are spun in completely different directions again, which is probably the only way they probably would modernise it for an audience.
I hope they don't. I really, really don't. It's just not necessary.
But I think the situation and the plot I've seen get done in teen-based dramas as well. I think Veronica Mars did it, where they had two characters have to work together. It wasn't detention, but the idea of putting these two or more mismatched characters. That's an episode of teen drama that happened ages ago. But I think it kind of the genesis of it was here, and it's quite nice to see that.
If they remade this, they'd just split the screen into five panels, and all you'd see is five different social media streams appearing. Because that's all they would be doing is tweeting from the library.
Five Instagram accounts.
There you go. Did you laugh at all? I know this is supposed to be. Was it Maya Brooker who recommended this?
Yeah, it was.
As a comedy. But did anyone laugh?
No.
No, I smiled and probably chuckled once or twice, but I didn't laugh out loud.
I'll bet you. When I've got a few of Judd Nelson's best lines here. When he talks about Molly Ringwald getting a hot beef injection,
ew.
I did laugh.
That's great.
And then when he asked her if she wanted to see a picture of a man with elephantitis of the nuts, and how do you think he rides a bicycle? And then he asks her, it's basically all these are just him picking on Molly Ringwald, and he asks her, are you medically frigid?
Medically
it
frigid.
Gets me every time.
Well, technically, doesn't he nearly assault her at one point, but just when he's under the desk? I mean, that was
well,
a bit.
I googled earlier, did Molly Ringwald use a stunt crotch?
Oh my god.
Because I was curious. I thought, that's not her. That's not her bits and pieces. And the answer is yes. She's been on record and said, I would never wear panties like that. It was a stunt crotch.
Well, I'm glad I live in a world where such a thing as a stunt crotch exists.
That's going
to
be
a time to be alive.
That's... Imagine your claim to fame being I was
Molly Ringwald's
stunt crotch.
Oh my god.
There's an episode title.
Oh, Tony, definitely. That's what you should just call this episode. Molly Ringwald's
stunt crotch. Molly Ringwald's stunt
crotch. Oh, someone should change their Twitter name to that, right now. Because if you don't, I will. Back. I might have to change my Twitter name to that right now.
She's a jazz singer now. She was in London recently doing gigs.
I used to get Jennifer Beals and Jennifer Graham mixed up. That's because I've got the same first name now. So.
We'd like to thank Maya Brooker for her nomination of the Breakfast Club tonight, and for the fact that Paul got to say Molly Ringwald's stunt crotch.
Thank you, Maya.
That's made my night. So that's everything for this evening. I'd like to thank Paul and Matt for joining me tonight and give them a chance to whore themselves out for you.
Hi, yes, you can find me on the interwebs, as probably everyone else. I have a website that's more TV focused, which is The Bottle Episode, which you can find on www.bottleepisode.co.uk, and I'm on Twitter on @TheBottleEp, and I'm also got a personal account, which is a bit private, but if you're really nice, I might allow you to view it at @xandmatt.
And you can find, just head over to Foul Critics, where I occasionally guest on that show, and I also have a podcast called Underground Nights with me and James Mullinger, where we talk about cult movies and interview directors. Thank you.
You can follow us on Twitter at @PickAFlickPod.
Dick a flick.
Pick a flick pod. Oh my god. I'm not going to swear.
Flip a dick.
I'm not going to swear because I've gone this long, but I'm not going to swear. And I'm only not going to swear. I'm not going to swear because Matt Latham made the point of me swearing before on Facebook. I'm not going to swear. You can follow us on Twitter at pick.
Lick a dick.
Pick a flick pod.
Can I suddenly pimp out that I still want people on Twitter to keep mentioning their own spin-offs of this, like Liftership and.
Liftership.
Or Rock a Crotch when we find the stunt crotches of other famous people.
We need to find out who was Molly Ringwald's stunt crotch. If anyone knows. Send us a letter or whatever, or one of the internet things.
Sorry, Emma.
Are you wrapping up, Emma?
I was trying to, but you know. We're available on iTunes, where you can subscribe, leave reviews, Stitcher, Acast, all that crap. You can follow me on Twitter at Crushinator2, but I'm extremely boring. Or you can follow me on my other account at Dead Meat Horror. And episode 2 of Dead Meat with Chris Haig, talking about Final Girl Theory, will be up whenever. Got all the way through without swearing. Yes! Thanks for listening and see you next time. Bye!